Last matter this afternoon, docket number 82118, Shavers Estate. First of all, I'd like to say Justice Hardesty isn't here today. He's got some family medical issues that he's resolving, and he will be listening to arguments. He'll participate in the deliberations. I just want to let you know that. Counsel, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would you like to reserve any time?
Your Honor, if I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for a moment.
Okay.
May I remove my mask, Your Honor?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice and Justices, good afternoon. May it please the Court, my name is Bradley Schrager. I represent the plaintiffs in this matter. With me is my co-counsel, Ms. Amanda Morgan from Educate Nevada Now. Also in the courtroom is lead plaintiff, Ms. Shea. I don't have to and won't resort to reciting for the court the dismal truths about public education in Nevada, because we know those. In fact, we know them too well, and the litany of them begins to get a bit numbing after some time. But to see it laid out and enumerated as we do in our complaint is often bracing, and I find that useful. It's, in fact, gone on so long that I don't want to use the word complacency, but we've gotten used to it as a certain status quo. And so this complaint was intended in some part to revive the notion of crisis, of ongoing crisis, and to ignite an opportunity to employ new tools in this fight. Now, the point of this filing of the complaint was never to fix public education in Nevada. This complaint, this case, or any case like it, that's a bit much to ask. It is, however, a manner of coming before you to ask whether or not the questions we are posing can be asked. We knew that this day would come, that before we got to the case to come, we would come before you to ask whether or not we could ask these questions, and that's why we're here. And the district court below granted the state's motion to dismiss on justiciability grounds, and we understand why. Now, number one, it was Judge Wilson's reasoned decision. But at the same time, cases like this, and you're aware of the cases in other jurisdictions like this, they stretch on for a long time. They are a tremendous commitment of judicial resources, to say nothing of the resources of parties and advocates. So it's a pretty good idea to come before you, come to your doorstep beforehand to see whether or not these are, in fact, proper questions. So let's get to it. I think it's a two-step analysis to begin with. Lengthy, but two steps. The first step is, does the right we are seeking exist? Right? That's a primary thing. It doesn't really matter regarding remedies or justiciability if the right doesn't exist. Now, Article 11, Sections 1 and 2, in our mind, clearly establish the right to, and I'm not sure what you need to call it, I don't really know that it matters, a suitable education, a sufficient education, an adequate education. These cases are known as education adequacy cases. The legislature shall encourage by all suitable means the promotion of intellectual, literary, scientific, mining, mechanical, agricultural, and moral improvements, etc. Section 2, the legislature shall provide for, not provide by law for, shall provide for a uniform system of common schools by which a school shall be established and maintained. Now, the state contends, in response to our arguments, that these are aspirational terms, portatory, in essence. We could not disagree more than we do. We find them to be a positive right of the people of Nevada and school children, a right to a meaningful opportunity to a suitable education. Because when you say suitable, the point is suitable for what? Suitable for the rest of your life, right? Promotion of these aspects of education for what purpose? To promote citizenship and engagement the rest of your life. I mean, we stand here before you at a moment in which the deterioration of our republic is not in question. The skills of discernment and engagement could not be more important than they are at this moment. And within these two particular sections, and in fact, Article 11 generally, reside the charge to the legislature and to the state to provide meaningful opportunities, not outcomes. The state has this a bit wrong. We agree with them. There are no guaranteed outcomes. That's a fool's errand. What there is a guarantee and what there is a duty to achieve are meaningful opportunities to useful educations. And we have, you know, we have laid out to you the 19th century definitions of most of the words in these sections: encourage, promote, provide for, maintain, establish. These are not aspirations to 19th century Nevadans. These aren't words of mere hope. These were, in fact, words of action. They were commands. Essentially, these were mandates. And it's within that resides the state's duty and the positive right of Nevadans to access that, you know, those education or that type of education. And this court has essentially said so itself. In Gwynn, which for whatever problems anyone has with Gwynn, whatever controversies Gwynn may have caused at the time, this court had that part of Gwynn exactly right. Because this court said, and it should proclaim it again as loudly as possible, education is a basic constitutional right in Nevada, and public education is a right that the people and the youth of Nevada are entitled to, through the Constitution, entitled to access. Couldn't be stated much more clearly than that, and I think it's exactly right. Now, the state also relies upon the California case of Campaign for Quality Education to say no, no, no. They're still aspirational. But I want to be clear that not only was that case different in its both in its question and its particular setting, our education clauses, going back to the Constitutional Convention here in Nevada in the 1860s, were drafted in direct and intentional contradistinction to California's. In fact, as we point out in the debates, the delegates went from the legislature may in its discretion establish uniform schools to the legislature shall establish and maintain or shall provide for. This was, quote, to ensure that the legislature will not neglect its whole duty. Legislature has that duty. It is described in those constitutional provisions. This court should find that that duty devolves into a right of Nevadans. Now, beyond that, we move from having found the right, and this has been found in other states with similar constitutional language, suitable, efficient, thorough, adequate, make suitable provision, right? Nevada's language, Nevada's constitutional language is in that family of constitutional charges. Having found that right, we now must decide whether or not there is a remedy or a violation of that right. Now, the district court, as we know, found this to be a political question and not justiciable. Again, we disagree. A political question, justiciability, is a disfavored concept. It is a narrow exception to the judicial responsibility to hear and decide the questions before it. And I have argued many times before this court, and I have often cited Marbury versus Madison. I'm going to do so again today, but I'm going to emphasize a word I don't normally emphasize. It is emphatically the duty of the judiciary to say what the law is. Not just that it is the emphatic duty of the judiciary. It is a duty. And so to find otherwise should be rare and not commonplace. In this instance, obviously, this court has taken its political question and justiciability jurisprudence from the well-known case of Baker v. Carr, incorporated through North Lake Tahoe Fire. And it's got the three elements or three aspects of it that, again, you know very well. Textual commitment, demonstrable textual commitment to a coordinate branch of government, judicially manageable standards, and impingement upon the policy prerogatives of a coordinate branch. Let's begin with textual commitment. Now, everything in the Constitution, most things in statute, is textually committed to some department or to some agency, some branch. It's really difficult to avoid that. That doesn't necessarily mean that having found a textual commitment, that the branch to which it is committed is now insulated from judicial review, or that self-monitoring is the exclusive manner of enforcing the right or ensuring compliance with the particular duty in question. The words "the legislature shall" appear dozens of times in the Constitution and many times within statutes, and many are the laws in the Nevada Revised Code that have been promulgated pursuant to that particular phrase. But for example, in Article 4, Section 2, the legislature shall adjourn sine die at midnight on the 120th day of its regular session. Now, I know there have been cases regarding what midnight means, but the legislature, though it's committed to them to wrap up shop at midnight on the 120th day, doesn't have the prerogative to escape review if it lingers for three more days passing laws beyond that. Right? In order to establish a textual commitment sufficient...
So can't we distinguish, counsel, between sine die, midnight,
yeah,
and the amount, the money the legislature deems to be sufficient?
Certainly we could. Please. Certainly we could. Yes. That takes us slightly outside of the tack or the approach we're taking in this case. Mm-hmm. Because that reduces what plaintiffs are doing here to a challenge to the money deemed sufficient by the legislature. The question that in Schwartz was obliquely treated, but not exactly centered, correct? That's not exactly what we're doing here. This is not a school money case. And in fact, the deeming of the sufficiency of that money may in fact be within the orbit of legislative discretion. This is a case about whether or not the resources that are provided to the schools, and money is just one type of resource, are sufficient to meet the constitutional charge that the legislature and the state have to provide a meaningful education. It cannot be simply reduced to money, and let me, well, everything well, can
but,
be reduced
but
to money.
Mr. Schrager, I apologize, Justice. No, I was just going to say, central common denominator to each of the three causes of action is an allegation that there's inadequate funding for the state's education system. And if we're talking about funding, then you're talking about a value determination of the legislature such that it's a controversy precluded by the political question doctrine, correct?
Well, in the prayer for relief, when it talks about a school finance, right, I don't take finance and funding to be exactly the same thing.
Okay.
And let me explain why. Now, everything can be reduced to money. For example, there is an English language arts standard within the Common Core, which the state has incorporated and adopted. It says students shall be adept at research and inquiry, sufficient to have original thought, right, to answer particular questions put to them. Now, if they don't have a librarian, if they don't have a library, it is incredibly unlikely that those students are going to be able to meet those particular standards. Librarians cost money. So do books. But saying that the lack of a librarian means that the state is not meeting its adequacy responsibility for that particular school can be reduced to money, but it's not just about money. It's about resources. So I would take issue with the notion that all we're doing is talking about money here. It's also about distribution, because if uniform schools are an absolute duty of the state and the legislature, the distribution of resources can also be just as important as how much money we're talking about. You can deem something sufficient on a generalized basis, on a per pupil basis, but if those don't reach individualized groups, whether they're English language learners, whether they're Victory School learners, whether they're, even if they're gifted and talented education learners, then you are still failing in the responsibilities that the state has to provide a meaningful educational opportunity for its students. So I don't think it can or should be reduced simply to a matter of dollars. And we are not here, or we won't be when the time comes. We will not be simply asking the court to demand that the legislature spend more money.
So when the complaint talks about an inadequate finance system and inadequate and arbitrary funding, that's not about money?
It's not only about money.
Okay.
Right. But let's back up to Article 11, Section 1.
Sure.
So how do we deal with the legislature shall encourage by all suitable means? Where does this court weigh in on the legislature's encouragement by all suitable means?
Well, the state has set standards mm-hmm. for what an education ought to be in order to provide the things that students will need for the 21st century, actually also for the 19th century, right? Those things have changed over time. Whether or not suitability has been reached is absolutely a set of answers to questions that courts can provide, right? If there are, for example, some of it is incredibly complex and difficult. Some of it's quite easy. But for example, when 99% of K through 3 schools have to apply for a waiver for class size reduction, that means that there's a problem with the standard, but also that adequacy in living up to those standards has not been met. Right? So it isn't that we or anyone else is asking the court to establish those standards, but instead to judicially manage the standards that the state itself has already set. So suitability, suitable for what? Suitable how? That can be judged. That can absolutely be found in a world now where the proliferation of federal state curricular mandates, elaborate student assessment measures, school accountability analytics, expert studies. The state has paid over and over for consultancy reports telling it what do we need to meet our goals. It has the answers regarding what it needs to meet those goals. It is fairly simple
Mr. Traeger, setting goals is not the same thing as setting mandatory requirements, is it? In other words, the state has clearly adopted goals in various areas of education. I would hope so.
And standards. Yes.
But
that's the distinction I would draw.
But have they made them mandatory? Or are they aspirational goals that they've established?
What is mandatory is the provision of an opportunity for an adequate education. And when I say adequate education, Your Honor, you understand I mean all those things.
Right, right. But so let me be clear then. You're talking about that requirement that you just articulated as finding in our constitutional provisions, but you're saying that what the court ultimately should order, not us, obviously, the district court,
right.
Should order is that it should comply with these goals and standards established already to meet the constitutional adequacy requirement you find.
Yes, I think the way that I would rephrase that slightly, if I could, is that the duty exists. The state itself, through myriad manners, has found what it means to find or to establish an adequate education. The state's saying this. Those are the standards that a court can hold the state to and to fashion, not simply, okay, go spend this much more money here, this much money there. We have to be able to give jurists like Judge Wilson, right, the ability and the trust to fashion remedies that are appropriate for the situation. The question here today isn't, you know, simply, am I right about what standards or what goals or any of those things. It's, are there any conceivable standards that a judge could use? Judge Wilson may come up with other types of standards, but the fact that there are no possible standards is something that's very difficult to accept in a world where we have so many ways to measure, not just outcomes, but what students need. The state has spent so much money being told, for example, how much weight they should give to funding for English language learners or for Victory School, and yet they fall so short time and time again. Right? So there are standards in place. We can recognize them, and courts can flexibly and judiciously apply them and hold the state to its own standards. Your Honor, I see I've gone over my time.
Okay, we actually chewed into your time a little bit on your rebuttal time, so I'll give you your full 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Give opposing counsel an equal amount of time.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Heidi Perry Stern on behalf of respondents, the state of Nevada. An adequate education, that is, of a particular level of quality, is good public policy. Voters should vote for representatives who will protect and enable such a policy. And we should all, as citizens, be willing to contribute funds via our tax dollars to support such a policy. The Nevada Constitution, however, does not establish a right to an education of a particular level of quality, nor does it permit this court to participate in the decision as to what level of educational funding is sufficient. Rather, the plain language of the Nevada Constitution instructs the legislature as follows. Number one, it should encourage the promotion of various listed areas of study. And number two, it must provide for a uniform system of common schools by which a school is established and maintained in each school district. Notably, the Constitution commits sole discretion to the legislature with regard to the sufficiency of school funding, instructing the legislature to enact appropriations to provide money to fund the operations of public schools, but specifying that the legislature shall provide, quote, the money the legislature deems sufficient. In funding the public schools in Nevada, therefore, the legislature is self-monitoring. This court plays no role in establishing or overseeing whether an amount of funding that the legislature has established is indeed sufficient. And as the United States Supreme Court recognized in the Nixon case, when a constitution gives a legislature the final responsibility for interpreting the scope of its power, a case challenging that power is non-justiciable. As a result of the plain language of the Nevada Constitution, and thus the intent of said constitution, the case brought by plaintiffs here is not justiciable. This court recognized in North Lake Tahoe, and later in Schwartz, that parties do occasionally bring issues to this court that this court cannot resolve. In particular, controversies that revolve around policy choices and value determinations that are constitutionally committed to another branch of government. Such issues, constitutionally committed to the legislature in the text of the Constitution, are non-justiciable. Here, plaintiffs seek a declaration of insufficient funding, an issue explicitly committed to the legislature. In fact, they ask for this court to directly interfere in the legislature's funding decisions.
You heard counsel indicate it's not just about funding. Can you address that in the context of your argument?
Sure. My argument would be that that is what they asked for in their complaint. So it's all fine for counsel to get up and say that it's not all about funding, but as what are they asking for? If you look at the complaint, they are asking for this court to interfere in what the legislature has determined is sufficient funding. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Thank you. Plaintiffs do point to other states that have granted the relief similar to what they seek here, or at least have agreed to resolve such cases and found them justiciable. But Nevada is different. Uniquely among the cases that are cited by the plaintiffs as justiciable, the Nevada Constitution explicitly commits school funding to the legislature, and it's in good company with other states having similar language in finding that such language is not justiciable. For example, in Rhode Island, the legislature is specifically committed to determine what funding it, quote, deems necessary. And that state has found that is a non-justiciable question, that it is specifically committed to the legislature. This language of the Nevada Constitution mandates a different result from the cases cited by the plaintiffs. And a statement by this court, as requested by plaintiffs, that the legislature has failed to provide for the school system to meet its mandates directly impinges on the legislature's role to determine funding adequacy. Constitutional commitment is enough for this court to find this case non-justiciable. But there are additional reasons that the courts are not suited to resolve this particular claim brought by plaintiffs. The controversy that plaintiffs ask this court to resolve is unmanageable, and another way to find that it is not justiciable. Plaintiff's complaint teems with allegations of serious policy problems. Most painfully, the reports of struggling and underperforming students, and also about shortages of teachers, facilities, and resources. It compares these deficiencies to the legislature's stated goals and concludes that the schools come up short. But it then asks this court to wade into that morass and measure educational outcomes against the legislature's stated goals, essentially asking this court to find that the legislature must do more than encourage the promotion of certain areas of study and the promotion of education. Instead, it wants this court to hold the legislature accountable for policy-related benchmarks that it's established for Nevada schools. These performance objectives...
Well, Council, sorry. Mm-hmm. So just looking at Article 11, Section 2, right? So focused on the legislature shall provide for a uniform system of common schools, and then it goes on, of course. Does that not mean that there's some standard, some minimum amount? Like, could it provide, you know, three schools for the whole state of Nevada and say, see, there's a uniform system, and the court can't review whether that's enough?
Well, I would love to respond directly to that hypothetical, because it does include each school district, so the answer to that is no, it couldn't do that.
So one in each
but
county.
The broader question that you ask is apropos. Words do have meaning, and as this court found in Gwynn, there is some sort of right to a basic education. That is, however, not what plaintiffs have pled here. They haven't pled that the state is not meeting the level of a basic education. They're asking for sufficiency. And they're also asking even...
What's the difference between basic and sufficient?
Sufficiency, they are tying to the legislative policy determinations. That's how I read their complaint. Most of their complaint talks about policy determinations made by the legislature. It doesn't, for example, as in the Gwynn case, say... There's no funding for schools at all. School can't even start. That's radically different. It doesn't say the legislature has decided to destroy all the school buildings. That would be different.
If there are classes in our high schools that have 50 and 60 students, is that a basis to challenge whether, in fact, it's a basic education that's being provided?
As someone who went to a college where I attended classes with hundreds of students, I personally would say no.
I would hope my third grader wouldn't be in one of the classes, though.
I do agree with that. But it's just, the issue is that those are not constitutionally provided. The difficulty...
So it would be constitutional if third grades were 50 and 60 students in class?
I do believe so, yes. Okay. And that is... what the district court, I think, was trying to say when it said that the language of the Nevada Constitution is aspirational. So the trouble that we encounter, or that this court may encounter, in trying to give meaning to these words, is that they're pretty unique among state constitutions in their removal from very specific mandates. So the language says, it doesn't even say, shall promote, as many state constitutions do. It says shall encourage the promotion, removing it one step.
But and, by all yes. suitable means. I mean, it adds mm-hmm. that in.
It
and
does.
You can puzzle yeah. over what does by all suitable means.
I agree, Your Honor. That
signify.
I'm not saying there is no case that could be brought that this court could adjudicate. What I'm arguing here is that this court can't adjudicate the case that plaintiffs have brought. In large part because of the conflict of asking for a determination of funding sufficiency when that is specifically committed to the legislature, but also in part because the standards set forth in the Nevada Constitution are pretty de minimis.
So if the state adopts all these standards for education and says this is what's required and then we consistently fail to meet them. There's no way to hold the government accountable for not meeting those standards?
In the judiciary, no.
Got it.
And I'll continue to talk a little bit about that because I was about to talk about the unmanageability of this kind of case, which leads towards a finding of non-judiciability. So the performance objectives are not constitutional requirements. That's part of the main problem of what plaintiffs have argued here. Even assuming that they can be considered judicially discoverable, Treating them as constitutional requirements disregards the plain language of the Constitution, and it creates an unmanageable controversy for this court to resolve. While other courts have found that in specific school funding cases, they've found them manageable, again, Nevada is different. This case is different. The particular allegations brought by plaintiffs under the particular language of the Nevada Constitution as it now stands are not judicially manageable. That's because this court is bound by what the Constitution's language provides. It is aspirational, as the district court found. This court is also constrained by the allegations brought in plaintiff's complaint. For example, plaintiffs are not seeking, as plaintiffs in the New York case cited in our brief did, to overturn a particular funding scheme set forth by the legislature that resulted in disparities or inequalities, undermining the uniform system that they are required to provide. Plaintiffs here are seeking to impose aspirational standards on the state. They're not seeking to get rid of something that the legislature did that conflicted with the Constitution. They're asking this court to look at what the legislature did do and find not that that was the legislature trying to do its duty to promote education, but rather that the legislature was somehow defining for this court what its mandate was outside of the language of the Constitution. So that's a very different ask from the cases that plaintiffs cite. Finally, a justiciability determination asks whether plaintiffs want the court to involve itself or would require the court to involve itself in policy issues. They do this here by asking the court to impose legislatively created aspirations as constitutional standards instead of looking to the actual language of the Constitution. This court should recognize that there is a difference between interpretation of what the constitutional mandate is, something this court may do, and making policy determinations pursuant to the constitutional mandate, which is something only the legislature can do. I would urge this court to look at the reasoning and language in the California case that we cited, the Campaign for Educational Quality, I believe it's called, because California is one of the few states that has language similar to that of Nevada's Constitution. And it includes the idea that the legislature should encourage by all suitable means the promotion of education. That court found and stated that it should not risk changing the constitutional language from what it actually is to what the court thinks it should be. And I would say in this case, as noble as the intentions of plaintiffs may be, this court should not change the Constitution's language to what plaintiffs think it should be, or what we all may wish it were.
What about their first prayer for relief, just declaring, making a declaration that a sufficient education's basic right under the Nevada Constitution? Just that declaration?
Yeah, two responses to that. The first is that I believe the court has already defined what the right is in Gwynn. So you would perhaps risk conflicting with that if you were to say something different in this case. Gwynn does not find a sufficient education as the right. It finds a basic education. And then secondly, if this court were to say that that relief could be granted here, it would almost be like an advisory opinion because it wouldn't provide relief. It wouldn't provide anything that plaintiffs are actually seeking. So I don't think that would be the appropriate way to resolve this case. In conclusion, the Tennessee Supreme Court has recognized that states are controlled in large measure by the particular wording of the constitutional provisions of those state charters. And this is a court that found the case before it justiciable, a case that plaintiffs cite. Even it recognized that the way that courts must decide these cases is by reference to their own state constitution. It's understandable that plaintiffs want this court to resolve the problems of the public schools in Nevada. I suspect that we are all sympathetic to that desire. But it's this court's obligation, as just one branch of a tripartite state government, to recognize that in this case, it cannot. And unless the court has further questions, I rest.
All right, colleagues.
Well, yeah, sorry, yeah. Counsel. So let's just explore that last part then, yeah. Right? I mean, we all the time consider things that the legislature does and the things that the legislature is charged with doing, like, you know, raising taxes. And we might have had a couple of occasions to look at whether they did that appropriately. So the fact that the Constitution says the legislature decides about funding education isn't that different than other things that we routinely look at.
I would ask the court to be a little more precise in looking at the commitment here, because it doesn't say the legislature is supposed to do X, and then we're asking this court to interpret what does that mean, and did the legislature do X or not do X. Mm-hmm. Instead, it says only the legislature gets to decide what funding is sufficient. I mean, it might be better if I actually read the exact language, but sure. it says, the legislature shall enact one or more appropriations to provide the money the legislature deems to be sufficient. And that is the language, quite explicit and direct, that takes this case as far as sufficiency of funding or resources out of this court's hands.
So part of the danger here, I mean, and what you just alluded to, and if we accept Mr. Schrager's representation earlier that's not about money, is that it's asking the court to then determine what money is sufficient and then bleed over into executive branch functions with the State Department of Education and even local school districts about how they then distribute that money to their various schools. I mean, it's like a trifecta of problems with invading other provinces of government.
That is true, and I will actually point this court to something that I discovered yesterday as I was reviewing some of the cases cited, and the Abbeville case, for example, in South Carolina, where they found the issue before them of adequate funding justiciable, they actually vacated that decision just a few years later, realizing that they were involved in a morass of public policy decisions that were just not appropriate for the court. That's the Abbeville case in South Carolina.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any further questions?
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, runners, and thank you to my colleague. I admit to being slightly frustrated and a bit confused. We are sort of told that there's some sort of right to an education, however that's described. And then we play a little bit of a word game as to whether that's a sufficient education or a basic education. Are we sort of talking about the same family of things, that a basic education, and I've sort of pulled this from our complaint, but itself was pulled from statutes and regulations here in Nevada, that a basic education, which is what we're admitting Nevadans have a right to, and the legislature and the state has an absolute duty to provide. A basic education must mean the state provides for an education that prepares all students to participate in civic and social life as informed citizens who are able to read, write, and think critically, understand and solve practical problems, and exit the K-12 education system able to succeed in a 21st century workforce, college, and a lifetime of continued learning. Now, if we're saying there's a right to this thing that I just described, but we're not going to provide a remedy for a violation of that thing, then the elements of the non-justiciability must be crystal clear. Now, the textual commitment aspect, I think, you know, we went back and forth on, I don't think that that is entirely clear. And in fact, there are no words of exclusion as to suitability or promotion or to maintain these schools. So the question, Justice Kadish, regarding the sort of quality of the facilities or the class sizes. I mean, I admit I'm a little surprised to hear that this court's hands would be tied if the goal was to have 17 students dated in a classroom and there were 60, then we would simply throw up our hands and say, well, you know, that's politics. Vote for somebody better next time. At some point, my political question becomes, what happens when politics aren't enough to achieve the things that these students have rights to, that we've agreed students have rights to. Now, I don't have a lot of time left, so I want to say this. I've read a lot of cases about standards and about all these different language twists and turns regarding the exact language of every constitutional provision. If there's one case I would point you to, it is the William Penn case out of the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. And it is crucial not just because the writing and the language is crystal clear and humane and enlightened. It is important for this reason. 40 years ago, Pennsylvania was brought a case just like this. And the court threw up its hands and said, I don't know how we're going to deal with this morass. May I finish my point, Your Honor?
Yes, please.
I don't know how we're going to deal with this morass. We don't have the standards for this. This is non-justiciable. 40 years later, the case was brought again, and the plaintiff said, the world has changed. You can measure everything other than baseball. I don't think there's anything more measured or measurable than education, Common Core standards, No Child Left Behind, state improvement plans. All those things have established standards that the legislature and the state have told you these are the core components of the duty we are to provide, the sort of basic education we are to provide to you. The state is telling you these things. And Pennsylvania said, you know what? The sea has changed. We can use these. And judges can be an enlightened and judicious part of finding, not necessarily ordering schools to do X instead of Y, but to fashion remedial schemes that can speak to the shortfalls which we all know exist in this state, not just in some small measure, but in a massive and ongoing, nearly epidemic manner. So with that, Your Honors.
All right. Colleagues, any questions?
I just have one.
Yes.
I just want to confirm, you are not alleging, at least I didn't see it, and I wanted to confirm, a violation of uniformity of the schools under Article 11, Section 2.
We have not specifically alleged that in this complaint. That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, does that would sound in equal protection, most likely, right?
Yes, exactly. So I just wanted to make sure you weren't
correct.
In that area.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, counsel, thank you for the excellent arguments today. We really like having you in person and being here, and we appreciate having you today. This matter will stand submitted. We'll stand in recess.